Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 41 of season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is lapsed movie blogger Jess Rogers. Welcome to the show, Jess.
Thanks, Rob. It's really great to be here. I'm excited you asked.
I hope you know what you're in for, and I hope that you don't have too much pepper on your pepper crush.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's one
I'm
of the
I'm gonna have some pecan pie instead. Sorry.
You could. That's will you partake in some pecan pie?
That's the goal every day. Right.
Exactly. So minute 41 begins with Harry rolling his eyes and ends with Sally taken off guard. So we ended things on Friday with, you know, Harry and Sally walking through Central Park, talking about, we had a big debate last week on the show about whether these are actually sexual fantasies that they're talking about, or if they're, you know, sexual dreams. You know, it's because Harry was talking more about a dream and Sally was talking about a fantasy. You know, so we don't have a clear answer as to what it is. You know, it could be either, but you know, the way that this minute begins is right at the very end of what happens in that scene. You know, Sally says, I just changed the, sometimes I vary it a little bit. And Harry goes, which part of it do you vary?
And
she goes, what I'm wearing.
What I'm wearing, exactly.
And then this minute basically opens up with Harry, you know, having a very strange look on his face and rolling his eyes, basically saying to himself that, you know, what the hell is she talking about? And then he just like looks away, starts walking, and like it looks like he has like a shiver go over his body, you know, just trying to imagine, you know, this sex fantasy that Sally is referring to. I don't know.
He just doesn't seem to understand. I don't know if he doesn't understand or if he just doesn't get how Sally sort of put together. I mean, clearly by the end of the movie, he gets it because that's sort of the movie, but we get all of these interesting pieces and it's this weird, are they friends? Why would they be friends? They have such different views on what this would be. And it really comes across in that moment where he's like, that doesn't make any sense. And he's sort of just relaxing into, okay, what can we do now? She's weird and I still like her.
Exactly. And he just like walks off and he's like looking away from her. He's not even looking at Sally anymore. And she's even more confused than he is because she doesn't know. She doesn't really know what's going on. And she goes, what?
And right. Cause she always,
she's clueless about this whole thing. But, you know, she thinks that, I mean, I think Sally is a very smart character. You know, she's put together. She's very smart. But there are things that she's just completely clueless about. And apparently this is one of them. You know, she's open enough with Harry, which, I mean, we talked about this a little bit last week, that I you know, their friendship started not long ago. And they're open really quickly about everything. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that this week also. You know, some of the things that they say to each other is something that you have to be friends with someone. You have to be very close friends with somebody for a long time before you're going to open up this much. You know, I
would expect.
I guess maybe the idea, I mean, again, because most people who are listening to this have already seen the movie, okay, the fact that they realize at the end that they are actually, you know, made for each other is something that they knew all along. And maybe that's why they were so comfortable with each other and that they could get into these type of conversations really quickly. You know, I think that's what it is.
In the movie, they keep talking about it. Like they reiterate it multiple times and including some of the minutes we'll get to, the idea that men and women can't be friends. And so the movie is trying to constantly buck that concept, trying to figure out who's right, Harry or Sally. Can right. men and women be friends or can't they? And this is the end of that scene is a really good version of, well, men and women are really different, but maybe they can try to understand each other if they're open about it.
Right.
And keep talking about these things. And so then it kind of moves into this, them being friends for the next couple of scenes.
Right. Exactly. We get some good, this week we get some good friend scenes. We got some last week also, but this week is also good. The things that they show us that they go through and stuff like that. And I mean, I'm assuming you know the fact that the characters are based on Rob Reiner and Nora Ephron. You know, the
Yeah.
two of them, these are apparently their personalities, that they have, you know, created these characters based on their personalities. So, you know, it's more of a question of how, you know, Rob Reiner and Nora Ephron were good friends. So how do they get these characters to realize that they can be good friends? I mean, as far as I know, Rob Reiner and Nora Ephron never had any type of intimate relationship. Their relationship was just they were good friends.
Right.
I think probably had the fact that Nora Ephron was married at the time. But you know, maybe I think I might have heard someplace where they had said that if the two of them had been single at the time, then maybe it would have been a little different. But since they weren't, it didn't make a difference because Rob Reiner had gone through his divorce from Penny Marshall. And you know, Nora Ephron had already gone through, I think, maybe two divorces at this point. You know, she was married to Bob. Wait, not Bob Woodward. She was married to Bernstein, right? She was married to Bernstein, not Woodward.
Right.
And I think she had another marriage before, and that didn't. I don't remember. But the bottom line is that they. I mean, have you listened? Have you by any chance had a chance to listen to the commentary of this movie?
I have. I've listened to a lot of it, yeah.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, on the version that I have, and I have two commentaries. One that's just Rob Reiner, which
Okay.
is interesting, but it's pretty bland. The way that he's just pointing out little observations here and there, it gives us some insight into certain things. But the other one is Rob Reiner, Nora Ephron, and Billy Crystal, and they are having a
Yeah.
blast. You know, the three of them are telling us everything from behind the scenes. They're saying, "Oh, that was your line. That was your, you know, you thought of that." Like most of the
I think that's
dialogue.
the one I've seen.
Right. Most of the dialogue in this minute that we're going to come across in just a second, Billy Crystal actually wrote, and they added that to the script. You know, and as we'll talk also, he even improvised a little bit along the way. But
Yeah.
we'll get there. We'll get there. Then the scene changes, and we are in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is known as the
Yes.
Met. Now you requested this week. Okay.
Yes.
Are you a fan of the Met?
I am. I've been many times since I was a kid. I live about 6 hours from New York City, and I love the Temple of Dendor, and that whole place where it's set is very iconically the Met for me. And doing a little background on this, because all of a sudden I realized maybe I'm talking about a ancient artifact that actually is under contention after being stolen from the Middle East in some place. And so I did a little more research about how the temple got to the Met and was absolutely very happily pleased, very happily discovered that it was not something that is sitting in this New York museum when it should be returned to its origins.
Sure. You're
Its origins no longer
starting to
exist.
sound like Indiana Jones, you know, but he always says that
Yeah.
it belongs in a museum. So I don't
Right.
know.
But yeah, so I don't know how much you want to know about why I chose it, but I'll give you a little bit. So there's a Sesame Street 1 hour special called Don't Eat the Pictures, where the Sesame Street gang basically hangs out in the museum and they accidentally get stuck there after dark. And one of the storylines is basically Big Bird goes to the Temple of Dendor at night. And there's a little boy that basically comes alive and he's trapped in the temple because his spirit can't be freed. And this Sesame Street thing, I don't know how it came into my world. I've never seen it again since I was an adult, but I think I probably saw it 50 times as a kid. And it's just a little scary because you've got this sort of ghost coming out of a temple. And they talk about it and being a star in the sky. And Big Bird has to basically help this kid figure out how to be released to be a star in the sky.
Yeah, that's
And there's other stories in it.
it actually sounds like something that's not for kids.
It kind of isn't, except that and it goes through like the art and the Met, and Bert and Ernie are there basically critiquing some of the art. And the idea is there's all these beautiful pictures of food and still lifes, and Cookie Monster has to be told not to eat the pictures. And I'm sure there's a song or two but I don't remember in detail. And so that's where my connection came from it. And so my little kid brain, the first time I went to the Met, wanted to see the Temple of Dendor. And then when I was old enough to watch When Harry Met Sally, there it is again. And it's this different sort of juxtaposition of like, oh, wow, this is like a thing people use as a cultural touchstone.
Oh, wow. When was the first time you saw Harry Met Sally? How old were you?
Probably 10 or 11. Like, it came out when I was a teen, or an early teen. And I don't think I saw it in the theaters, but it was a movie that we watched in college less than 5 years later all the time.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I had a VHS copy. I now have a DVD copy, and I've seen it many, many, many times.
Okay. That's fair. That is completely fair. So the Met, the Metropolitan Museum of Art of New York, has over 2 million works, and it's separated into 17 different departments.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it's just amazing, the area of the whole museum. It was first built in 1880. And they started with a 2 million square foot building. And obviously things have expanded, you know, over the years with that. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Do you know they have a mascot of the Met?
Yeah.
Do you do?
It's like, it's the little symbol that's on the pins that you get when you enter the Met, isn't it?
Okay. And what animal is it? Do you know? What's their mascot?
I don't actually. Yeah. I can visualize it, but I don't know what animal
it's
it would
be. It's a hippopotamus. It's a hippopotamus known as William the Hippopotamus. I don't know why they chose that. That I'm not really sure. But
there's no connection I'm aware of.
I'm assuming there is some sort of connection, but I wasn't able to figure out why that was the chosen mascot for. Don't know.
I can't help you. I don't know. It is. There's a little symbol like when you get your button, because going to the Met is essentially free. It's they ask for a donation and you're welcome to give whatever you want to give. There's a suggested amount, I'm sure, but you can go for free, which is one of the coolest things. When I was living in New York City before and during grad school, there were a lot of places you had to look for that you could go for free. And not all the museums are free all the time, but the Met always is,
right,
or has been. And you can't see the whole thing you couldn't see the whole thing in a week, let alone a day. So you choose what you want to go see, and then you go check that out.
Right.
And it's just a really great place to be. It's right in Midtown, and it's easy to get to. It's right by the park. It's just beautiful.
Yeah. So, okay. So I actually just looked it up. So the Willie the Hippopotamus is an Egyptian hippopotamus statue that they found.
Wow.
That they actually found when they were, you know, in one of the digs. So I can actually see a picture of it. You can't right now. It's a blue hippopotamus that has a whole bunch of different, writings and pictures on it and stuff like that. And that has become the mascot. It's very interesting. It's
very cool.
It was found in the tomb of the steward known as Sendi. So, don't really know enough about that, but I actually was like imagining like this guy dressed in a hippo costume, you know, and that's what you're, you know, when you think of a mascot for that. But
yeah, exactly.
Apparently it's not. Yeah. So there right now, or the shot that we see, is the Temple of Dendor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is a Roman Egyptian religious structure that was originally located in a place called Tuzis, which was later renamed Dendor, which is about 80 kilometers or 50 miles south of Aswan. And the Emperor Augustus commissioned the temple and dedicated it to the Egyptian goddess Isis. In 1963, when the UNESCO were trying to rescue and relocate the temple from flooding, because the Aswan High Dam
was being built.
Yeah. So the Egyptians then gave the temple to the Met, and it's been on exhibition in the Met since 1978. So, I mean, here right now it's what is it, 45 years ago, 45 years it's been sitting there, and Harry and Sally went to visit it 10 years after it's there. I mean, that's already, quite a long time.
And I saw that there were lots of places that basically were vying to get the temple to bring it into their museum and everything. Mm-hmm. And because the Met was willing to build this space, which makes it a brilliant shot for a scene for this shot, because it feels like it's outdoors, but it's indoors, and you get to see this interesting setup. So the Met won the rights to show this because they had basically planned and built this space that would protect it from the elements while giving a visitor experience that was probably as close to being outside where the temple was as they could. And I think it's just remarkable they were able to plan ahead with the intervention of UNESCO, as you said, to protect this in a very specific way.
Yeah, but it's interesting that they wanted to protect it and send it to America as opposed to trying to find a place in their own country. If it's a temple, I mean, obviously it's the ruins of a temple, and I don't think people are still worshiping there, but still, it's the type of thing that you wouldn't think that someone would want to give to a different country. You'd think that they want to keep it local. But okay, I guess at the time they weren't thinking that far ahead. I wonder if people ever regretted it.
Maybe some money changed hands. Yeah,
probably. Well, come on, something's got to pay for. If you said that nobody has to pay to get into the Met, something has to pay for all of the maintenance that they do in the Met. So who knows?
Exactly.
Until I started doing research for this movie, I've seen this movie dozens of times. I never paid attention to the fact. I knew that they were in a museum. I didn't know which museum or where. So like when you told me a few months ago that you want the Temple of Dendorsin, I was like, okay, I don't know where that is. I had to actually then look up what was the Temple of Dendor, and then I was like, oh, okay, now I understand what that is. I always paid attention to the dialogue and not to where that's happening. No, but that's one of the great things about doing movies in this particular way, that you actually can. I mean, this movie has tons of location shots. We'll get to another really famous one later this week. But for now, I mean, we were at Shakespeare and Co. a few weeks ago, and we walked through Central Park, and we were at a few different cafes. I mean, they knew where to shoot. to give us the New York feel of it all.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So they have this establishing shot of the Temple of Dendor. And, we get to see that just for a few seconds. And then we see in the distance Harry and Sally walking in the background, which is great because that also shows how small they are compared to this temple and vice versa.
Right.
How large this temple actually is, because you can see people, walking next to it. So then the dialogue begins, and I'm just going to quickly go through the dialogue, and then we'll break it down afterwards, as opposed to stopping and starting each time. So Harry says, "I have decided that for the rest of the day, we are going to talk like this. I'm not going to try and do the voices, pretend that Harry that you're hearing the voices." And Sally then tries and says, "Like this?" And he goes, "No, please to repeat after me, Pepper, Pepper. Pepper, pepper, pepper,
pepper.
Waiter, there is too much pepper on my peppercush." And then Sally starts laughing, and then she tries to say it and says, "Waiter, there is too much pepper." And then Harry helps her, "On my peppercush." She goes, "On my peppercush. But I will be proud to partake of your pecan pie." And then she loses it again, starts laughing, and then she goes, "Oh, no. But I would be proud to partake of your pecan pie, of your pecan pie, pecan pie." I love the way that he drags that out there.
I know.
And then he says it again, "Pecan pie, pecan pie." And once again, she just loses it. And okay, so we'll stop here for now. We'll continue with the dialogue afterwards, because this is a good. Now, my first question is why the hell is Harry deciding to do this? Like, how does it help his day that he has decided that they're going to speak in a funny, intonation.
I agree. I think it's
I mean,
like a
it's great.
mix
It's great.
of,
I'm not knocking it. I love it. I love the way they do it. There's no question about that. But my big question here is why? Is he trying in some ways to impress Sally?
Ooh, I don't think so. I feel like it's especially coming off that last scene where they've shown such different perspectives on having a sex dream or whatever. Now they're basically the movie's sort of changing to being silly, and he's trying to, I think Harry is trying to figure out if Sally can be silly. Like, I think he thinks of her as sort of a repressed person and is trying to figure out if she can be silly too. And I think the scene and the way they go through it, like, she's a little uncomfortable. She laughs at it and doesn't just dive right in the way like older friends would do, like who have done this kind of repartee like 10
Right, well,
times.
this is
Like,
the first
oh, we're gonna
time,
go to a right, clearly. And she's not sure what's happening and if he's serious or how this is gonna work. I think Harry's trying to figure out if Sally can be silly. Like, he like clearly has a sense of humor, and he's talked about other people not having a sense of humor. And he's trying to see, I think, if Sally has one. That's what it's always hit me with, why he's doing this, to see if he can get her a little less comfortable than that previous scene was, to show that she's not as repressed as maybe she comes
Because
across.
then he feels that he can be better friends with her. I mean, is that the idea? He feels
Yeah, I think
that
so.
he needs her to loosen up, and maybe this is the way to do it.
I agree. I think that's kind of what he's trying to get at, is like, let's see if I can loosen up Sally, see if we can change her sort of way of being. And I think the movie does a good job with the costuming to show that she kind of does, right? She's generally very, very layered for many, many things. And then when you get to the New Year's Eve scene, much later, she's in just a sheath dress. So she's sort of unlayered and open in some ways. Like this scene, she's got lots of layers on. She's very much buttoned up. And Harry's just kind of always a little schlubby in his outfits, and he's not as fancy ever. And I think
No,
this scene
sometimes
is a
he is
good
with the with
moment.
when he when I mean we'll see it later. I think maybe it's the
Oh,
end of
yeah.
today when he's in the white sweater.
The white sweater, right. But I think he's generally less, and I think that might be a moment of him coming closer to where she is, meeting her where she lives. And this is him trying to draw her to where he is, being silly with
Okay,
that.
that's fair. She doesn't do it as well as he does, obviously.
No.
And I wonder if that's because Meg Ryan just isn't as funny as Billy Crystal, or if it's the
Yes.
idea that Sally is, still somewhat repressed, or whatever it could be.
Well, and you talk about the commentary, and I don't know if it was in one of the commentaries that I've seen, but they do the scripted part, which is the waiter, there is too much pepper on my paprikash, and then she finishes her repeating him, and the next line, but I would be proud to partake of your pecan pie, is completely improvised. Like, you can see her looking at the
She looks
director
at Rob
to
Reiner and
say,
gets the
yeah.
and he gives her the sign. Keep going, keep going. It's good.
Keep
It's
going,
good.
keep going. Like, and it's so weird to have heard that and then see her in the scene, because it's weird that the character would look away in that particular direction. But I'm glad they left it in. Like, it's not distracting that she did. It was
That she looks
like,
off screen.
what do you mean? Yeah, she literally looks off screen. And I love that Billy Crystal is trying to get this much younger Meg Ryan to loosen up in how she does this. I think he would just improvise the whole show if he was allowed to, and I think that would be problematic. But I think his bits of improvising are really throwing some cool moments in this
Yeah, for
scene.
sure. I mean, I think it still amazes me every time to think about the fact that there's a 13-year difference between the two of them. The because they have such great chemistry here. Their
Right.
characters are only 5 years apart, according to the script.
Okay,
Okay, according
yeah.
to the script, when they started in 1977, Sally was 21 and Harry was 26. You know, he was finishing up law
Okay.
school, and she was just finishing up her, her BA in, I guess, journalism, communication, something like that.
Right.
Okay, so they mentioned Pepper quite often. You know, there are, was it five references to the word pepper, right? So pepper is comes from a peppercorn. Okay, there mostly people use black pepper, but did you know that there are other types of peppers? I mean,
I
we're not even
did.
talking about like the pepper. You know, we're not talking about, I don't even know how to differentiate between the peppers of peppercorn and, you know, like green peppers and red peppers and things like that. You
Right.
know, I guess more from the perspective of a spice. I don't know if pepper is really a spice, but you know, so
I think so.
do you know what other color peppers there are as spices?
Well, in my own spice cabinet, I have pink peppercorns and red peppercorns and white peppercorns, in addition to standard black pepper.
Wow.
Yeah, my dad's a foodie.
Okay, and they do they do they all taste similar, or they all have very different tastes?
Not very different. They all have very slightly different, and it has to be for just the right dish that that it even matters at all. Like white, I find a little less intense, less spicy. Pink feels a little different in that it's, I don't know, softer in some way. And then the one that I actually use for most cooking is the mixture of red, white, black, and pink. And they all, it just tastes nice.
Wow.
Good
Okay.
peppers.
Very cool. That's great. Right. So there's black, there's white, there's green.
I've heard
Okay.
there's green. I've seen my dad's
Right.
green.
Dried green peppercorns are treated in a way that retains the green color. Which is why they stay green. They do decay quickly if they're not dried or preserved. So you can't ship them internationally like most other types of peppers. Then you have,
Oh,
yeah, then you
interesting.
have the red ones that you talked about, and then you have the pink ones, which also you mentioned. Do you know where pink peppercorns are grown?
I don't. I want to say Turkey in that area, but I could be
Nope, it is
wrong.
in South America. It's either in
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm
Peru
totally
or
wrong.
Brazil. But and
Okay.
what's very interesting is that pink pepper is member it's a member of the cashew family.
Wow.
Therefore, people can get allergic reactions for people who have nut allergies.
Oh, good to
Yeah,
know.
so you have to, you know, make sure you have an EpiPen with you know, if someone goes into anaphylactic shock along the way.
Very good to know.
Yeah. So black pepper is mostly from S South Asia. That's where it started
Okay.
many, many
Yep.
moons ago, I guess you can say. I mean, they've had pepper around for you know, hundreds, if not thousands of, no, for thousands of years. You know, they actually found black peppercorns stuffed into the nostrils of Ramses II, which was part of his mummification
Wow.
process, which, you know, again, maybe that's why Harry is mentioning it, because they're in the temple, you know, of Darton. You know, who knows?
An Egyptian
There you
temple.
go. It could be.
I think it's also one of those like theater tricks. You want to use certain enunciations in that sentence to like get your mouth practiced. So it's this moment of taking the pepper, and getting a good accent and a pop on your
Right.
sound while they're practicing it. So I think it's Billy Crystal sort of adding in, or actually all of them, Rob Reiner and the rest of them, their theater-ish background, their stage background of
Right.
getting the right noises into their mouth.
Correct. So yeah, I mean, I have tons of more information about peppers, but I think we've talked enough about peppers. I don't, or the spice pepper, let's say. So,
Did you go into
of
paprikash?
course I
That's the
did. Of
important
course I did.
one.
So, do you know what paprikash is?
I have had it. I don't know actually what it was being made of at this point, but I have had it in the past.
Okay.
It's
So
very
it is
good.
actually mostly known as chicken paprikash, which is a
Right.
Hungarian dish. sometimes it's also known as paprika chicken. Okay, it is
yes,
one of
I
the...
was going to say it's not pepper as much.
Right, it's paprika. It's one of the most famous variations
right.
of paprika type Hungarian dishes. The name is derived from the fact that they use a lot of paprika. And, you know, it's a very Hungarian spice that's used, you know, very much so. They use it a lot.
Yeah, exactly. You can get sweet paprika and you can get a hot paprika.
Right. It apparently resembles goulash. It's like in the same family.
Yeah.
That type of thing. It's usually served with dumpling-like boiled egg noodles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes with tagliatelle.
Tagliatelle.
There you go. And boiled noodles, rice, or things like that. Yeah. So I actually never even thought about the fact of what paprikash was beforehand. You know, I'd heard it. Okay,
oh,
paprikash,
nice.
Paprikash. You know, but didn't really think about it.
It's actually very good, and if you're making it, you want to mix the sweet paprika with the hot paprika, and depending on how hot you want it to go.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to mention about pepper that I forgot to mention before is that it was commonly believed that during the Middle Ages, pepper was used often to conceal the taste of partially rotten meat that they were serving.
Ew.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Oof, that would create a very odd association in your head,
yeah,
I guess.
Because apparently pepper...
That maybe you don't like
right,
pepper.
Right, because pepper was actually, you know, seen as something that was only affordable to the wealthy. So, no one knows if that rumor is true or not, but I just thought it was really funny that, that they would actually mention that.
Yeah.
So, the what else? Pecan pie, right?
Absolutely. I like that he, like you said before, he stretches it out. Pecan pie.
Pecan pie.
As if pie, one syllable word, can be stretched out into all three letters of it.
I wonder how long,
pie.
Exactly. I wonder how long Billy Crystal was, you know, practicing that line before he told anybody that he was going to say it. You know, like what made him think of it? I don't, I would be really amazed if he thought of it on the spot, you know.
I would 100% bet that he thought of it on the spot. It just feels so, maybe he's a prep comedian, but having seen him in so many other comedies, he does so much off the cuff type stuff.
Yeah.
And it's maybe just because it builds on that, the pop of the pepper. I would be proud to partake of your pecan
pie. Right. It sounds like a tongue twister.
It's got the alliteration.
Yeah, it's got the tongue twister alliteration for sure. When do you think pecan pie was first published as a recipe? You know, like, when did someone think of it?
Whoa.
How far back do you think it goes?
I would bet it goes back to, it feels like an American dessert, but it may absolutely not be. And at least in the United States, it's a very Southern dessert.
Correct.
So I would guess the early 1800s.
Late 1800s. The first known association of the recipe was in 1886 in Harper's Bazaar.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I love pecan pie. And just because someone out there listening is angry at us for saying pecans, and because that's what Billy Crystal says,
pecan.
And knowing that it is probably appropriately pecan.
Exactly. But we're talking,
if you're from the South,
but we're
it's
quoting
pecan.
The movie. So he doesn't say pecan pie. He says pecan pie.
No, he doesn't.
You know.
Pecan pie.
Exactly. So pecans are actually native of the US. They actually were able to find evidence that there were pecans in Texas that the Native Americans used over 8,000 years ago.
Whoa, that's very cool.
Yeah. And the word is an Algonquin word, pecani, which refers to several nuts.
Oh, okay.
You know, things
that's
like
funny because
that.
Algonquin is in the north, was in the Northeast more than in Texas.
That I don't know.
No,
you're,
no, that's
you're,
cool.
You're the professor,
I mean, maybe
not
using
me.
The same
so,
nut.
You know.
And I live in the Northeast, so I could be biased that it just was in my third grade education.
It's very possible.
We had to build Algonquin longhouses.
It is actually the official state pie of Texas.
Cool.
That they chose in they decided in 2013 to make it the official state pie. So, you know, when Harry and Sarah and Sally are walking around the Met, it wasn't.
No. That's funny.
Yeah, they're different.
Yeah, it's such a southern dessert. Yeah,
there are different types of variations. You can have butterscotch, you can have chocolate brownie, mm-hmm. maple, sawdust pie, yep. transparent pie, and whiskey chocolate chip pie, which basically yep. you put
maple, pecan, bourbon.
That's right, Jack Daniels.
Yep.
It's an interesting thing to add to a pie. You know, not something I would have expected.
No, it's basically a pie of sugar, and then the pecans are on the top.
So, in other words, you need to put a little bit of booze in there to make it work better.
It helps to cut it out, yeah, to balance it. Chocolate pecan pie is one of my favorites. Oh, wow. It's so okay, good.
Great. So, if you have a recipe, you can send it to me, and I'll post it. You know, so people can see
sure.
see the you know the Jess's pecan pie chocolate. Pecan pie recipe. Yeah.
I think I even do have a recipe that I used last summer. Let me
see if I can okay. Hey, if it works, why not? Now, I find it really funny when Sally is, you know, doing these imitations, she has like a Joker look on her face. You know, it's
yes.
Like Billy Crystal keeps his face normal when he's doing it, but hers, she like squishes up her exactly. No one can see what you did but me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I know. I couldn't help it. It's like she's just got this like frozen face, as if manipulating how her lips move will help her make that sound come out. It's so bizarre watching it again for this. I hadn't realized like how odd it is for how frozen her face yeah. is in that way.
Yeah. So then Harry continues with his with this strange voice, and then he says, would you mm-hmm. like to go to the movies with me tonight? And Sally doesn't realize that this is not part of their whole thing. And she says, would you like to go what? And he goes, not to repeat. Please, to answer. Would you like to go to the movies with me tonight? And then Sally goes, oh, and we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what her actual answer is. But she is really taken off guard by that question. She didn't know. She wasn't expecting it. You know, it's the type of thing that do you think that he's basically asking her out, or he's saying, you know, if we're both free tonight, let's just go to a movie together like friends? Which do you think this is?
I think he's doing that. I think he's just like, let's keep hanging out. And do you want to go to the movies tonight? I don't think he's asking her out for a real date. But I think he is trying to potentially test the waters of a real date, just to see like, okay, this is what I would do if I was hanging out with a woman I found attractive and we would go and do this other thing together. Right. And I think the problem is, at least when she doesn't answer instantly in an affirmative, she's potentially shooting down that real date, right. And it leaves that last second very ambiguously uncomfortable.
Yes, I felt very uncomfortable watching that, even just looking at it right now, because, you know, over the years of when I was dating, you know, decades ago, these type of things did happen to me. You know, I would ask out sure. a friend. You know, there was the whole idea of, you know, do you want to ruin a friendship by going on a date? And I was always under the impression that, well, I want to have, you know, my best friend as the person that I'm going to be dating and eventually share my life with. So I was like, okay, and I was willing to take that chance. And obviously, I have a long list of former good friends that are no longer friends because of that. But, you know,
I felt he's really going out on it.
See, that's why I asked the question, because to me, it feels as if he actually is, you know, more than testing the waters. He's saying, okay, let's go out and see, you know, I had a great time with you all day today. Let's see where this goes. You know, that type of thing.
But I think he's doing, because he's doing it in that funny voice, he's not willing to be like perfectly vulnerable, right, and just straight up, do you want to go out with me tonight? Like he's named a specific event,
right,
which is what you do with friends. Like, would you like to go to the movies with me tonight? It's not, would you like to go out with me,
correct,
tonight? So he's hedging just a little. And by using that funny voice, he kind of gets to backtrack a little in the vulnerability aspect of, well, you know, I was just kidding. And he's setting himself up so he could.
Right.
And instead it just gets awkward because her instant answer is uncomfortable.
Correct. And therefore we're going to have to leave people for the next 24 hours very uncomfortable thinking about,
yeah,
what, you know, where this conversation is going. So do you have anything else you want to say about this minute,
yeah,
before we get into the script?
No, that's a great,
okay,
minute.
So the script, this scene is pretty much word for word the way that it does it. When Harry starts talking in the funny voice, and in the script it says funny voice. It doesn't say what funny voice. You know,
right,
they allow Billy Crystal to decide how he wants to do that. And he says, may I have some pepper? Instead of just saying, you know, pepper. And then he, mm-hmm, talks about the fact, may I have some pepper on my peppercosh? But then he says something else. He says, I think I'll have some tomato juice. And she repeats it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but I think Proud to Partake in Your Pecan Pie is a little better. I think it works better.
Yes, much stronger.
and funnier.
Yeah.
Definitely. Works really well.
Oh, much.
Yes. Yeah. So
That's a good line not to have cut, because it also doesn't have that poppy sound that the pepper and paprikash and pecan,
correct,
all do. So it's outside what they probably,
yeah, which
want.
Which I'm assuming is what Billy Crystal realized.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances. So Jess, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Very cool. There's a little bit of probable repetition, because one of the things I was looking at, looking at her movie history, like I was able to generate probably three, and then I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something big or obvious that I couldn't generate off the top of my head, so I looked it up.
You're allowed to look it up. It's not a test for you. It's an open book. It's an open book test.
I wanted to see if I could just generate a list, and then they would really be my favorites.
Ah, okay.
So my top
five.
Right,
that's fair.
So number five, I'm going to give a solid to Top Gun. I know it's not a movie she's known for, but because I just watched Maverick before Christmas, and that her absence is noted in Maverick, I realized what a great couple of moments she has in Top Gun. Like, she comes in and she's Goose's wife, and they're in the bar and singing, which really sets up who Goose is and that he has this whole life in contrast to Maverick. So Top Gun is my number five, Meg Ryan.
Right. I was actually very disappointed that they didn't they couldn't get her to be in Maverick. You know, I think even just a small little cameo would have helped a little bit. But okay. Instead they said to kill her.
They could get
away
with
it. They said to kill her.
Or assume that they changed her hair over.
Well,
time.
Meg Ryan, if you pay attention, in every Meg Ryan movie she has a different hairstyle. And in this one she's got three.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Like wildly different. Even when she's she has at least three in this, more like watching the 80s transition all
correct
along from some of that into the 90s. So number four, do you want to keep going? Okay. Number four is Joe Versus the Volcano, one of her, I think, three movies with Tom,
mm-hmm,
Hanks.
Yeah.
And so Joe Versus the Volcano is a terrible movie. It is, I think, trying to be tongue-in-cheek about everything. And it doesn't really succeed except when you've seen it like 25
right
times. And then it just succeeds across the board.
Right.
That it is sort of family lore about, if you have a good trunk, you can go on vacation, and as long as it floats. Like, we make these random comments that have to do with Joe versus the volcano all the time. And it's such a random movie to like have a family connection to. But if it comes on TV, I will absolutely watch it. And one of the ways I knew my partner was going to be my husband is he knew what a brain fog was or a brain cloud was. And it's like, okay, you have enough movie knowledge to understand a brain cloud. And she plays, I think, three different characters in that movie. Sisters or half-sisters. And the one that ultimately is the one that is supposed to jump into the volcano is just so lovely. And we get like these weird alter egos of her. And the final one, and I didn't look up their names as the characters, but she's just lovely. She's nice. She's interesting. She challenges everything Tom Hanks is doing. And even though the movie's about Joe, I think Meg Ryan steals so much of that movie. She gives these kooky performances, like the sister who basically talks like she always has too much gum in her mouth and isn't sure what's going on and is crazy and like smokes and moves around and has bright red hair. To then this like super competent ship captain.
Right. The three characters she plays are Dee Dee, Angelica, and Patricia.
Right. And they're just, I don't know. I think she does a great job in that. So that would be my number four. Number three has to be When Harry Met Sally. I don't know if I was supposed to pick one that's not
You're supposed to.
Okay. Pick mine. So When Harry Met Sally, for all the reasons I'm sure you and all your other guests have said, she's just wonderful. She does the buttoned up, sex dream, is where I change what I'm wearing. She delivers the line so well. And the stuff you'll talk about eventually, the what happens in Katz's Diner, etc. You can't beat that. Like, it's iconic in so many ways. And she is a reason because of that. I can't imagine almost any other actress of her generation doing anything close to what happens.
Correct. From what I understand, we'll talk about this more next week, but from what I understand, she actually suggested that she do the orgasm on screen, you know, as opposed to just talking about it. But, you know,
that's crazy.
Completely.
Okay. So my number two is a odd movie that I don't think was a big hit, but it was really interesting for me. I spent time in France when I was in high school and did a ton of French classes in high school. I minored in French in college, except for the last class. So it's not on my transcript, just to be full disclosure. But it's the movie French Kiss! Exclamation point.
With Kevin Kline.
With Kevin Kline, and he does a wonderful French accent because he's more than capable of it. And she gets to play this
Canadian or ex-Canadian
Canadian sad tourist who's gone to France to win back the douchebag, love of her life, Timothy.
Timothy Hutton.
Who has basically just like left her for a younger person, even. And we get to see she's gone, she's uncomfortable with the whole process. There's lots of things about it, but her whole attitude through the movie just always thrills me. Like, she's got the super spiky short hair. She wears a vest. I think she was basically what Ellen became before Ellen was Ellen. If the timing
works
out.
And she was lactose intolerant.
And very lactose intolerant on the train. And I just like it. They get a little drunk. Why didn't you wake me up? And I love that she basically steals the necklace back. And he's all despondent because he's lost his vine and his necklace. And she figures out he's a thief. And it's not that she's this super naive person all the way through, but she's not really in on his heist either. And she starts to realize what a not nice person Timothy was, and that that Juliet deserved him, and I kind of like how she mocks being French and yet falls in love with Luc and is very happy with Luc. And Kevin Kline is just fun, and the scenery is gorgeous at his family's vineyard, and then on the Riviera, just the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I love it. So I must have seen it, I don't know, 100 times in college.
Okay.
I know. It. I don't know. It just does it for me. And then the number one is always Sleepless in Seattle. It can't be beat. She does a good job basically finding that weird version of how do you fall in love with someone you've never met? And how do you have this moment or this connection with either a voice on a radio or, I don't know, it was the early podcast,
yeah,
right?
Talk right.
radio. And
Dr. Marcia, Dr. Marcia Fieldstone.
Fieldstone.
Right.
Yep. And she kind of connects with the tone of his voice and then thinks it's crazy. And the two of them do a really good job building that chemistry that lasts them through Joe versus the Volcano and You've Got Mail. So.
Very good.
It's pretty sweet.
Great. So, okay. Thank you very much for that list. That was a great list. So what do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you, even though you're a lapsed blogger, or would you rather that people just get in touch with you via me? What would you prefer?
No, they're welcome to find me on Twitter. I still exist there for now. It's basically a long wrap back to my blogging days. The blog was called Insight into Entertainment. I think it's still on the internet. I didn't take it down. And my Twitter handle is in_entertain. And the name handle you'd see is Dr. Jess Rogers. All right.
Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill with all your faults. I love you still, it had to be you, wonderful you, had to be you.